World Affairs Report, 30 minutes of conversation designed to make you better aware of the world around you. The World Affairs Report is brought to you by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh in cooperation with KQV News Radio. The World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has been bringing the world to Pittsburgh for over 80 years. To learn more about the council and upcoming events, please visit worldpittsburgh.org. And now, the World Affairs Report.
Welcome to our show. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Angelica Ocampo, and our guest today is Professor Louis Picard, who's the newly appointed director of the African Studies Program at the University Center for International Studies at the University of Pittsburgh. Professor Picard, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And also congratulations on your new position.
Thank you.
Professor Picard was also the former director of the Ford Institute for Human Security at the University of Pittsburgh. He has a very extensive resume, and so I'm going to just touch on some points that we can discuss. His area of research has been international development, human security, local government, and civil society, obviously focused in Africa in general. He has done a lot of field work in Southern Africa, East, West, North, you name it, you've been there.
True.
He has worked as a teacher and a researcher in Botswana, Uganda, Somalia, Egypt, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Guinea, Morocco, Lesotho, Mozambique, and we could go on and on and on. Again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
There's a lot to cover, but as I was saying at the beginning, you've focused a lot of your work on human security.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you can, you know, explain what that means, what it entails.
Human security starts with basic survival, particularly in time of crisis. It can be, of course, natural disaster. We know the hurricane situation and what happens. But unfortunately, in other parts of the world, particularly in places such as Africa, there is much human catastrophe that causes security issues in terms of hunger, famine, access to water problems, protection from violence and so forth. So we start with survival and then rebuilding after that to create at least a more secure situation for people fundamentally within the context of a political, natural, or human disaster.
Mm-hmm. Now, when one looks at Africa, the last decade has brought tremendous growth to key African states. And actually, The Economist has recently observed that six of the world's 10 fastest growing economies are now in sub-Saharan Africa. Yet most of the human security crises are also in Africa. So how can you have both at the same time? What's wrong? What's broken?
Well, change, of course, is difficult, but it's also important to keep in mind there are 54 countries in the African continent. The United States continental states fit into Africa three times. And so the variety is incredible. Large states with politically diverse activities tend to be those that are the fastest growing, although there are some, Botswana in Southern Africa, very small state with 2 million people, one of the best performers both politically and economically in the continent. So you have to look regionally, and then you have to look at the country itself in terms of its history and its politics to start.
So what are some, other than Botswana, what are some of the best performing and some of the worst performing, and what are some of the reasons?
Some of the best performing are Morocco, Nigeria, off and on. Nigeria's got a lot of problems. Kenya in East Africa. South Africa, despite its political problems, continues to perform quite well. I'd say about a third of the continent now is either politically stable and or economically growing. Though that changes from day to day. Zambia and Central Africa is another.
Mm-hmm. And what about the worst performing? What are the reasons for those?
Okay, let me mention one or two. Yeah. Somalia, South Sudan, some of the Sahel countries such as Chad, and in southern Africa, of course, Zimbabwe. My own view is that politics has a lot to do with it. Politics has a lot to do with growth. When politics is stable and open and pluralistic, politics is also the problem, particularly in terms of authoritarian regimes, unstable regimes, and countries which are ethnically divided.
And what role does education play?
My own view is that human resource development, which is health, education, and social and community development, plays a great role. You cannot have a stable society without an educated middle class. So achieving that middle class and the health and the education needs that go with it, in my view, is a very important component of both human security and development.
And can you track that kind of like the difference in performing to issues like education?
Yes.
So
yes.
There's much stronger education in the countries that are performing well.
Yeah, the countries that are performing well tend to be countries where there is better education, a better education system, but also an education which is directed towards areas and skills of the economy that are needed. And that's very important. That plus health issues of health, which are a precursor to education. If you don't have good health, if you don't have a healthy environment, you're not going to be able to have access or make use of access to mm-hmm. education.
But if you're looking at big trends in data, do you think the continent is progressing in human security as it is progressing in economic growth?
This is one of these yes and no answers, of course. Some areas are, mm-hmm. some countries are, but not all of them. There are issues, including religious issues, northwest East Africa are plagued with issues related to the Islamic State and Islamic fundamentalism. Most Muslims in these areas are peaceful, development-oriented, but there are lots of factions and lots of issues that are really affecting attitudes towards government, towards society, and towards the society, which is both secular but tolerant of religious differences.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit more about your work in Uganda mm-hmm. that led you to also become kind of like a documentary, a film mm-hmm. person?
I started working in Uganda actually in 1966 in January. I was 3 years in the Peace Corps there, and then went on to do research and teach and develop programs throughout the continent. But I gravitated back to Uganda about 2008, particularly to get involved in some of the human security, educational, and health issues that I think are so important. So I became involved with a group called Bright Kids Uganda. My wife was Pauline Greenlick, who is a filmmaker, also became involved and interested in the same issues. And so we've been involved there for about 8 years now, 9 years, and we're focusing on five organizations which bring in and take care of street kids, homeless kids, in places like Katwe. The film Queen of Katwe was filmed there. But also in terms of kids who have suffered violence, particularly in the northern part of Uganda, kids whose parents have died of HIV/AIDS, and also some of the parents themselves, particularly the women. We were working with a group called Sarasav, which focuses on issues of human security, and in particular acid attack violence, which is unfortunately quite common in Uganda. And so we formed our own nonprofit, ASA, Social Fund for Hidden Peoples, which provides funding and technical assistance support, particularly for Uganda, but with hopefully addressing issues in other parts of Africa and perhaps even other parts of the world.
Let's go back to the point you just made about gender violence and acid mm-hmm. attacks in Uganda, which, like you say, are more prevalent than people in general know. And mm-hmm. that led you to produce a documentary called Unveiling the Scars.
That's right.
And you tell us a bit more about the documentary.
Yeah, that was focused on a woman who, by the way, is now a graduate student at the University of Pittsburgh, Hanifa Nakiwewa, and we...
So she's still here in Pittsburgh.
She is here in Pittsburgh, that's right.
That's great.
Yeah, and she suffered an acid attack about 4 years ago now. We believe it was her husband, and it was done because she wanted to go back to work. In fact, had a job at the United Nations in Uganda, and her husband, a university lecturer in economics, didn't want her to. So the result was this acid attack. And of course, rather than just accepting it and disappearing, as a lot of people do, she fought back. And so the film focuses on her and her organization's efforts to challenge and particularly to inform people about this. And as you may know, acid attacks are unfortunately not limited to Africa. We see them all over the world. There was a recent incident in
London.
That's right. And there was one in France, south of France, Marseille, just a few days ago.
That's right.
Yeah.
For two American, five American.
That's
students.
Right. We're not quite sure what happened or
exactly.
why, but.
So you actually hosted Hanifa here in
yes.
Mount Lebanon
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
had a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I saw her, she has a brief mm-hmm. interview on YouTube that people can see. And it is really moving
mm-hmm.
to see her talk about the fact that, for example, her young daughter, I think she was five at the time, she was also a victim of the attack.
Yeah, she also, fortunately not on her face, but on her arm and I believe her leg.
Mm-hmm.
Both the kids are in school here as well in Pittsburgh, so
mm-hmm.
We're happy for that.
Mm-hmm. So how have things changed ever since you created this documentary, kind of shine a light on this issue? Have things
mm-hmm.
changed in Uganda? In terms of gender violence in general, but in Africa.
Well, that would be a hard thing to claim because we're one small group
right.
looking at an issue. I think we're making inroads in Hanifa and her organization, and our other organizations are making inroads in Uganda. But this is a big challenge. And one of the things that we're devoted to in all of our programs is something called social entrepreneurialism. That is that we're not just interested in charity or even foundations or philanthropy, but we're interested in setting up situations where we can generate incomes and for people, and they can work for themselves, particularly if they're economically displaced because of the attack.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people we worked with in Uganda was actually an up-and-coming actress. She had appeared in a couple of films in Uganda. Of course, she lost half her face, so that was a career, and unfortunately, but she's now doing other things. We're importing crafts, we're working on other economic activities through microloans support to try to generate both an interest and to create opportunities.
What about the justice system? Were the attackers ever prosecuted?
The good news is the attacker was initially investigated. And again, I'm not going to make accusations,
right.
but
no,
our
no.
thoughts are quite clear. Unfortunately, there was no justice there. The university professor, if it was him, is still teaching at the university and is still free and was never even tried for the crime.
Okay.
So.
So that was 2014 that this documentary was unveiled. Where can people watch it?
It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and it's called
Unveiling
the Scars.
Yeah.
So you can go to
mm-hmm.
YouTube and watch it.
Yeah, and it's on websites at the university, but the way to find all of the documentaries that we've been involved in is to essentially search on Google or YouTube for Pauline Greenlich, who is the producer-director, and we have a sub division of our ASA group called ASA Films, and they're on our website as well. So,
the other documentary you produce is called Under the Umbrella Tree.
That's right.
And
mm-hmm.
this also brings it very close to home here in Pittsburgh. Tell us about that initiative.
Yes. That's a feature-length film that We did, or Pauline, I really should say Pauline did. I worked with her on it and appear in it, but about Bright Kids Uganda, about the home and school system that's evolving there, and it involves focus on a street kid from Katwe named Medi, and his attempt to try to reconstruct his life after he was essentially driven out of his home by his stepfather, beaten badly. And so it focuses, among other things, on the creation of Bright Kids Uganda, Medi's and other kids' entry into it, and then full circle, Medi now has a home and a school of his own serving Katwe, and he basically is 45 street kids from Katwe in his home and going to school. He operates a primary school, a grade school, alongside the home itself with over 200 kids in it now.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So am I correct to say that many GISPIA students volunteer in this home? Can you tell us about that initiative?
Yeah, we started the internship program at the University of Pittsburgh in 2009, I believe. It's been going about 7 years. Last year we had four people, last summer I should say. The year before we had seven. I'd say if we do a total, we're talking probably 25, 30 over the span of time. They usually go out for 2 to 3 months. They can fulfill their required internship. They're all people in the second year of their master's program, so they're quite advanced and mature, and they take on jobs of various kinds, a lot of them either research or project related, while they're there. And so we're very happy with it. We're continuing to work with the program in our African Studies program. We're looking at other opportunities, not only there, but in Liberia and possibly in South Africa, to expand the program. But we think it's gone very well, and I think the graduate students who've gone through it are pleased as well.
That's a wonderful initiative. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
If people are moved to support this cause, is there a place that they can go?
Yeah, they can go to ASA Social Fund for Hidden Peoples. And we have a website. I'm not going to try to remember what it is, but if you Google it, it'll come up. Mm-hmm. We're certainly supporting a number of these initiatives through that. It's also quite possible if people are interested in volunteering and they have appropriate skills, we can work with them on a shorter volunteer basis to one of the three or four institutions that we support for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then take some time off and see Uganda, go to the game parks, and see all of the good things that you can find in Africa as well.
Tell me, what are some of the major misconceptions we have about Uganda? I've never been there.
Well, the major partial misconception is that this is the country of Idi Amin. The last great king of Scotland, and that good film. Uganda is much more than its leadership. It has not had good luck with leaders. There are still leadership issues. The second thing, of course, is that all countries are alike, and so Uganda is one country, one of 54, so there is such a diversity in the continent that that's important. That's another misconception. And finally, I think Uganda as a whole has an economy which is functioning well. It has lots of challenges, but has a lot of potential. And it's a country that you can visit, you can enjoy, you can also participate. Ugandans are generally very open, very interesting, and quite frankly, very entrepreneurial. Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania have very advanced mobile banking, for example.
That's right.
I just saw an ad on the paper in the TV this morning on mobile banking, which there's probably at the level that Kenya and Uganda were about a decade ago. People are just starting to do that. Of course, we've had other ways of banking that they haven't. But no, the technology jumps are very interesting, especially in terms of phones and other kinds of mobile devices.
Yeah. Cell phone banking and mostly throughout Africa. It's replaced the lack of infrastructure.
Yeah.
So it's gone directly into mobile, which is amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. We're talking to Professor Louis Picard. He's the Director of African Studies Program at the University Center for International Studies at the University of Pittsburgh and an expert in Africa and human security. And I should have mentioned this, you've written or edited 11 books and over 40 articles.
I guess it's 12 now, but
12.
Who's counting?
So keep having babies. Okay,
yeah,
12 books.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about gender-based violence, and we've been talking about your work getting involved and creating, actually founding a nonprofit in Africa. All of these issues lead me to want to ask or to discuss with you, what are your thoughts about foreign aid in Africa? Mm-hmm. You've talked about, you know, philanthropy versus social entrepreneur.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about the, what we could say, the good and the bad of foreign aid and its impact on Africa?
Yeah, it's a complex question. I've done 3 books on foreign aid, and just very briefly, foreign aid is many different kinds of things and has a long history, and it is part of international relations. It also includes international security, foreign policy, and trade issues. I think foreign aid works best when it's focused on social development, particularly health and education. Health particularly, I think, is probably the highest achiever when it comes to foreign aid. We've not done so well in terms of education, human resource development. Perhaps it's a lack of patience. I think our efforts in democracy, governance, nation building not only have been difficult but are somewhat controversial. I do think it certainly has its drawbacks because much foreign aid is directed at political and economic issues, not social development or humanitarian concerns.
And you did mention the book you wrote, and this is called A Fragile Balance, Reexamining the History of Foreign Aid, Security and Diplomacy. And in it, you argue that ultimately there have been both policy problems and moral ambiguities that have plagued technical assistance, diplomacy, and foreign aid.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's the fragile balance is the balance that a country faces, and this focuses on the U.S. Between diplomacy and diplomatic concerns that are massaged or facilitated by foreign aid, security issues, since a lot of foreign aid started before and after World War II and had much more of a military security and defense base, the debate between commercial and idealistic or humanitarian concerns, which continue to be tensions really probably increasingly so in the last 5-10 years.
So this is certainly a debate that is occurring in the U.S., the value of foreign aid and the ambiguities that you're pointing to. Is this also a debate that happens in Africa among community leaders?
Yeah, it is. It is a debate. And there are a number of leaders that have and still do argue that foreign aid is a negative rather than a positive.
A hindrance.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and it's not limited to Africa. I think the debate occurs in Asia, Latin America, whether or not fair trade, whether or not open markets versus closed markets is a better way of going about egalitarianism and development internationally. There are lots of contradictions between foreign aid and trade policy, for example. So these are really controversial areas.
But like you just said, probably health is the area in which foreign aid has proven to be the most effective. HIV is probably, the AIDS epidemic is one of the examples.
Yeah.
How, and we had guests here talking, they were from Africa, they were talking about exactly this topic, about it, the AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. How serious do you think the situation would be if the U.S. would withdraw foreign aid for HIV or AIDS?
I think it would be serious, particularly in the health area, because foreign aid tends to cover areas which are very big and difficult to address. HIV, AIDS, the Ebola crisis. people will argue a lot of mistakes were made with the Ebola crisis in the three West African countries, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. But without that assistance, that Ebola crisis could very well have spread outside of that area into the region. It creeped into Nigeria a little bit. There have been earlier outbreaks in Uganda, and there was concern that it would get into Senegal. So I think it would be a serious area. I also believe that the education that people get, supported by international, both domestic, both private and public assistance in education is important. Education, I think, is a critical factor.
Mm-hmm. But I guess my point is, has the HIV epidemics been contained permanently, or is this something that could bounce back?
That's a tough one, not being a medical doctor.
Yeah.
But I don't believe it has been contained fully. I believe there it's certainly gotten a lot better in terms of Africa. We work with HIV/AIDS victims and their children. An African child in Uganda has a good opportunity to survive and do well, all other things considered. But in times of war, in times of crisis, again, in times where human security is threatened, it can explode back again. And in places such as the Congo or South Sudan, one can only imagine the health situation generally, and specifically HIV/AIDS. Since HIV/AIDS in Africa tends to be carried by migrants, including truck drivers and soldiers, that's how the infection spreads. So I don't think we've won the battle yet.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, before we have to leave, you spent 3 years in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
so that is another area in which you're very
yeah.
well versed.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about the current situation of
mm-hmm.
South Africa? Where is it heading?
Mm-hmm.
What should we expect?
Yeah. Yeah, I started working on South Africa in the 80s, and I've done 3 books on South Africa, primarily focusing on governance and local governance and democracy. South Africa is at a turning point right now. It has facing a lot of political issues, particularly in terms of corruption, state collapse issues. It could go one of two directions. They could continue to go down the direction of what I would call a corrupt or a patronage or a collapsed state. That would be have serious economic repercussions not only on South Africa but the rest of the continent. Or a reform movement either within the ruling party or outside could come to power and set it straight. It still has a tremendously powerful economy in Africa. It is a member of the BRICS, the countries which are said to be evolving and emerging. Whether it'll stay there or not, I don't know.
Professor Picard, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Professor Louis Picard. He's the Director of African Studies Program at the University of Pittsburgh. Thank you all for listening in. Thank you, Amy, our producer. And we'll be back with you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the World Affairs Report, brought to you by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh in cooperation with KQV News Radio. The World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has been bringing the world to Pittsburgh for over 80 years. To learn more about the council and upcoming events, please visit worldpittsburgh.org. Be with us again next week when we take a 30-minute look at issues of global importance.